back at camp, the pages we turn, and we're thankful for what we learn. We rightly divide this truth it will show, and we'll know which way to go.
Good afternoon. This is Pastor Craig, and this is Study His Word. Thank you for joining me, and yes, I'm still here at the station. That's what happens when you give somebody a key and go out of town. So I want to welcome you, and I thought today we've gone over some Bible stories in the past. We've covered the story of Joseph and his multicolored coat. We covered the story of Jonah being swallowed by the big fish. And we did Noah's Ark. So I thought today we'd spend a little time reading and talking about creation. And there's a lot I could say, but I don't know how much I will say. But anyway, let's first look at the account of creation as it is in the Bible. And here again, it's like so many of the other Bible stories. We all have some familiarity with the story of creation. But when it gets down to the more specifics, most of us know very little about that. So that's why I thought we would tackle that today. So it's in Genesis chapter 1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that light, and that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, which divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Now all that was is the waters that were down below, like for instance the water on the earth, and the waters up above in heaven or in the sky. You had a separation there, basically dividing water into two areas. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together in one place, and let dry land appear." And so it was. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day. Then God said, so you had all the plants created on the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So that was evening, in the morning, or the fourth day. Then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures. Let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded, according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth, each according to their kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them. God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the sea, the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on it. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be food. Also, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food, and it was so. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Now, that is the biblical account of creation. Several things I want to say about this. First of all, there is a big debate within Christianity as far as whether this is six literal days, morning and evening, six literal days, or does each day represent an era, a specific period of time? Because there are instances where that word day can mean a much longer period of time. Can be many years. It can be hundreds of years. You know, in the day of the early kings, in the day of whatever. So there's the debate about, was it a day or was it long periods of time? Now, my own personal opinion on this, as I tend to agree with the people who say it is six literal days. There is nothing in here, in what I just read to you, there is nothing in here to indicate that it is not a literal day. There's no reason for us to believe that the day that is being talked about is a time period. Now, where the arguments come from that the days represent time periods is from the standpoint that people want to figure out how we can have rocks that are millions of years old and fit it into this picture. Millions of years in rocks, millions of years in animals. You know, the scientists want to tell us that the dinosaurs became extinct 65 million years ago. And they, you know, and we've got rocks that are billions of years old. Well, in reality, we have absolutely no way of accurately measuring the age of rocks, the age of the Earth itself. There's all kinds of theories. You know, when I was in school, they were teaching that the Earth was 4 billion years old. Now, I don't know what they're teaching in school today. I don't know. I'm sure it's probably different. But we have not found any way to accurately ascertain what the age of a rock is. And I find it very interesting that that a geologist did an experiment right after Mount St. Helens erupted. If you're old enough, you remember Mount St. Helens exploded. I think that was back sometime in the 80s. I could be wrong, but it was in the 80s, 90s, somewhere in there. I believe it was in the early 80s. But anyway, what this geologist did is a couple of years after it had, you know, exploded and rocks were strewn everywhere and there was lava flow and everything, he gathered up various rocks from the eruption of Mount St. Helens. So you had rocks that were newly formed from the lava and things like that. And what he did is he submitted these samples to various geological laboratories for dating purposes. And what's really interesting is all the results he got back had dates that were just all over the spectrum. Just, he had dates ranging from 10,000 years to multiple millions of years, because we have no way of accurately dating them. We have ways that we think are accurate, but the problem is they're not, because you get this wide variety. So I have no reason to believe anything other than the fact that this is a description of six literal days. There have been many people that have just sat down and run the numbers of, you know, if dinosaurs became extinct 65 million years ago, what kind of animal populations would there be today? And you have an enormous number of, you know, numbers that come up, and if that was true, that we've had these animals living for millions of years, we'd have incredible animal populations and we'd have incredible numbers of fossils. So, and there's a lot of stuff that kind of goes into all of this, but I just wanted to mention that. So what do I believe? I believe that it occurred exactly the way it's written here. 6 days, God created everything. If you can't believe what is written here, that in 6 days he created everything, if that's not an accurate description, then you may as well throw the Bible away, because now it throws everything into question. If you can't believe this, what can you believe? How would you know? So that's just my own personal beliefs on that. A couple of other interesting things here is when you see things like, let's see, when he created the plants. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And all that means is these plants and herbs and everything, they were created a certain way, different types, trees, flowers, things like that, and they're in that creation process, their seeds were created so that they would reproduce the same thing. An oak tree would produce an oak tree, and grass would produce more grass, and a pear tree would produce a pear tree. And we see that same thing carry over into the birds and the fish and the animals, so that a horse makes a horse makes a horse makes a horse. And you can kind of see where I'm going with that. But, birds make a bird, make a bird, make a bird. And as far as evolution, there's all kinds of things that make it so obvious that evolution was just a theory. That's why they always called it the theory of evolution. It was just a theory. And there are so many problems with it. And the more we know, the more science discovers, the more it points to creation by an intelligent being. And I'm not saying that it proves there is the God that I believe in. I'm saying is the more we learn, the more it points to something intelligent had to create it. Many of the leading atheists who struggle with a lot of the things that can't be proven in science, a lot of the leading atheists have abandoned evolution. They'll talk about, creation of the universe, theories about how the universe came into existence, reasons for things in the universe that, don't make sense. But most of them stay away from the evolution debate, because more and more of the leading atheists are admitting, Hawkins is one of them, admitting that the evidence points toward intelligent design. We know so much about DNA that there's no way it could happen through evolution. And, it's interesting, because the theory of evolution is that everything progresses in a more complex manner. And things get more complex and more complex and more complex and more complex, where that is the only area where that is supposedly true. All the other areas in physics, thermodynamics, any of that kind of stuff, things tend to break down into different parts, get less complex, get more simple. And the only place where we see something getting more complex and more complex is in that theory of evolution. So there are so many problems with the theory of evolution that, like I said, most of the leading atheists have abandoned that argument and concentrated more on the creation or the where the universe came from and how it came about. Now, another thing that I will say bothers me about how Christians have unknowingly bought into parts of the theory of evolution and bought into parts of that narrative, and I don't even think they've stopped to think about it. And I'll explain what I mean here. We have a couple of scientific classifications. Okay, we have classifications for the plant kingdom, and we have classifications for the animal kingdom. And I want to concentrate on the animal kingdom. I don't know if when you were in school, you kind of talked about that type of thing, the classifications for the animal kingdom. And it started out big and would get smaller and get smaller. You know, as you got more defined in what the animal was, it would get smaller and smaller and smaller. For instance, you probably don't remember, but I couldn't remember all of these, so I kind of have a little help here. But the largest classification is domain. And that's for like the animal kingdom. Then you have smaller groups. That breaks down into what they called kingdoms. And the kingdom is animalia. And whatever that is. Animals. It's fancy. It's a Latin way of saying animals. Then kingdoms are broken down into various phylum. And then in phylum, they're broken down into various classes. And here's the class that you should be most familiar with. Mammalia, or mammals. And then from there, there are broken down into more categories called orders. And in the class mammal, there is one order that is called primates. Okay? And then from there, they go to suborder, and they go to infraorder, and then they went to family. Now, when I was in school, they left a couple of these out. I mean, for us, it was kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, and tribe. But they've more expanded it. When you get down to family, they are hominids. Okay. The reason I mention this is where Christians have bought into what they've been taught, and they never question it. Supposedly, we humans are in that class of mammals. And, you know, they taught you in school about how mammals are warm-blooded, and they have live babies as opposed to eggs. There were some other characteristics of being a mammal. And we were in the class of mammals. And then from there, it's broken down to orders, and the order is primates. And that's where people were. We were in that order of primates. You know, and primates had, you know, the gorillas and all the large monkeys. Because, see, we're related to monkeys, right? Yeah, right. And then down lower, it gets broken down further in the hominids and everything. So the specific classification for human beings is Homo sapiens. I'm sure that's probably familiar to most of you. Okay? We were Homo sapiens. That Homo comes from the family of hominids, and then the sapiens is, you know, the specific one that we are. And we're the only one left in that Homo category that was called sapiens. The others have died out. Well, here's the problem with all that. If you remember, when we were reading, let's see, on the sixth day, God created all the animals. And he created creeping kinds and cattle and all those things. And when he was done, he saw that it was good. Then he didn't say, let's create one more animal. He said, let us make man in our own image. See, animals weren't created in his image. Plants weren't created in his image. Fish weren't created in his image. Birds weren't created in his image. But he said, let us create man in our image according to our likeness. and let him have dominion over the fish, the birds, the cattle, and every other creeping thing that creeps on earth. So it's rather obvious that man is a separate and distinct creation of animals. And it doesn't take a lot of intelligence to realize that. I mean, we know, common sense tells us, that we are not an animal like a dog. You know, we have, you know, a vast superior intelligence. We're capable of so much more than any of the animals are. You could even get into things like a soul and having a conscience, having self-awareness. And there are, you know, large areas that we could get into. But the point is being that we were created separate from the animals. We were created different than the animals. You know, God had several different beings that he created. He had, first of all, angels that he created that are a certain type of being. He had man that he created, which was different from the angels, and obviously it was different from himself, even though we were created in his image. So right there, you've got essentially three different types of beings, two of which were created. You have God, that's one type of being, and then you have the other two types of being that he created. He created angels, which, by the way, he created angels before he created the earth. But he created the angels, and then he created man. Now, in addition to those beings that he created, he also created the earth. He created all the plants. He created all the fish and birds and things like that. So when I go back to this thing about Christians have bought into what they were taught with, to me, it apparently never really giving it a second thought, is I've never heard anybody ever say that, no, we're not Homo sapiens. Because Homo sapiens is a classification that is used in the classifications of all animals. The problem is, we're not an animal. We're a different type of being. So that's the problem that I have, is that we have to stop and say, wait a minute, I'm not a Homo sapien. I'm a human being, and that's what I am, made in the likeness of God. I don't belong in any animal classifications. So I just challenge you to think about that sometime, because you will hear it. You'll hear that we're mammals, okay? We are mammals. We're not fish. We're not birds. We're mammals. We have hair. We're warm-blooded. We don't lay eggs. We have babies. Give live birth. The problem is, we're not mammals in the sense of that word. We're not part of the animal classifications. Now, we share a lot of characteristics with mammals. The fact that we have live births and that type, and we're warm-blooded, that type of thing, we share characteristics. But there again, you know, that's not hard to see. If you're creating all kinds of animals, there's going to be a basic outline or a basic structure that you're going to create everything with. They're going to have a lot of similarities. For instance, a car. Every car has a lot of similarities, but it also has a lot of differences. It might be a Buick, might be a Buick sedan, it might be a compact Ford, It might be a Bentley. It might be a Maserati. It has the basic structure, but it's got all kinds of differences. And that's how our animals are. It's got the basic structure, but cows are cows and fish are fish. And even from a DNA standpoint, the basic building blocks of life, they're going to share a lot of things in common. I read one time that like 25% of our DNA was the same as, you know, like a daisy or an oak tree or something. Well, that's understandable because it's a living thing and we're a living thing. But just because we share some basic components that are used in the creation process doesn't mean I'm related to an oak tree or I'm related to an ape or gorilla or things like that. So that was just something I kind of wanted to throw at you and to think about. You know, the next time you're thinking that we're mammals or you're thinking that we're Homo sapiens, just kind of step back for a minute and say, are we? Am I a mammal? I might share some traits, some characteristics that mammals share, but I also share those with a pine tree. Doesn't make me a pine tree. Doesn't make me a plant. Doesn't make me an animal. So just some things to be thinking about. You can have cars with all these differences. They're a car, but they've got all these differences. Kind of like animals, but they got all the differences. But you use similar parts for a semi-truck. But a semi-truck is not a car. Kind of like humans might have some of the basic building blocks that animals and plants have, but we're not an animal and a plant. So just something for you to think about. Hopefully, you maybe got a clearer picture of creation and how it occurred. Let me just mention something else. Verse 28, then God blessed them. This is when he made man and woman. Be fruitful and multiply. That is our command, to be fruitful and to multiply, to populate the earth. Population is not a bad thing. Having families, having kids is not a bad thing. That's what we're supposed to do. It's one of the basic things we're supposed to do. Now, we could go on, and I would talk more about the more important things that we're supposed to do, but at a very basic level, that's what we're supposed to do. So we're to fill the earth. We're to multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So that was our command, to have dominion over the fish in the sea, to have dominion over the birds, to have dominion over every living thing on earth. Now, I honestly believe that we are not to abuse animals and plants and things like that. They were not put here for our abuse. I can't in any good conscience advocate for just wanton destruction, abuse, neglect of the animals and birds and fish and plants that are on this planet. They were put here for our benefit. They were put here for our use. Let's face it, a lot of what was put here for us to survive on. The plants that we were supposed to eat, the animals that we're supposed to eat, they're there for our benefit. Doesn't mean to waste it, but it's there for our benefit. So here's where I have the problem with people that want to elevate, and especially animals, and even to a bigger degree, cute animals. Because most people really don't care if we kill rats and mice and things like that, but they have a problem if we harm something that's cute. Not advocating for the destruction of any animal whenever we want, because we're supposed to, the animals that were put here for us to use wisely and properly. And that's where I have a problem with, and I won't name anybody, because it's more than one organization. There are certainly several organizations that put animals as being more important than human. And you can say, you're just exaggerating. But if you watch some of these television commercials asking for money, you would sure get the feeling that animals were more important than human beings. Let's face it. People get upset. People get upset about whales and polar bears and porpoises and sea lions dying or being killed or starting to vanish. People get upset about it. But those same people aren't getting upset about a million human beings that are killed in the womb of their mother every year. Just want you to ponder that for a while. So, we'll end it on a positive note. I do want you to think about that, but we'll end it on a positive note. Let's see. It goes into a little description of how God created Adam. So I'm going to do that. Let's see. This is the history of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, before any plant of the field was in the earth and before any herb of the field had grown, for the Lord God had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground. But a mist went up from the earth. Notice that it was watered from the earth and not in the form of rain. Went up and watered the whole face of the ground. And then the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. So again, this is, you know, he created all the animals, and it doesn't give a description of how he created them, whether he just spoke them into existence, which I believe is what happened, rather than gathering dust up to create all these fish and to create all these birds and create all these animals. I believe he just spoke them into existence. And then he created one man, Adam, and he did it by gathering up some dust, forming man, and breathed life into him. Again, that's a description that shows you, again, how we are different from the animals. So that's pretty much the story of creation. Let's see. I think... you know, and how did he create? Oh, here's something. Let's see. He brought all the animals to Adam. You know what? It says here. My bad. Out of the ground, the Lord God formed every beast of the field and every bird of the air. So they were formed out of the ground too. Brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And whatever Adam called each living creature, that was its name. So Adam gave names to all the cattle, to the birds of the air, and to every beast of the field. Now, I'm going to give you something for you to ponder over the weekend, because this is something I have often pondered, because the Bible doesn't tell us. First of all, what age was Adam when he was created? Well, he was a day old. But what age physically was Adam? Was he created similar to an 18-year-old? Was he created similar to a 25-year-old? Was he a super mature man at 50? I mean, I tend to think he probably had the appearance of like a, you know, a 20 or a 25-year-old. That's just my own personal opinion. But here's the thing to think about. How much knowledge did Adam have when he was created? Think about that. He didn't have to go to school and learn his ABCs. He didn't have to go to school and learn how to count. He didn't have to go to school and learn how to speak whatever language he spoke. When he was created, he already had all that knowledge in him. I mean, it says God brought him the animals, and whatever Adam named them, that was their name. So he was created and already had language, knowledge. So it would be fascinating to know how much knowledge did Adam have on the day that he was created. I mean, he had to name the animals. He was able to talk to God. We can read in there where he talked with God. What language did he speak? Those are some interesting things to ponder. I would just challenge you to spend a little time pondering that. You won't come up with an answer, but it sure is interesting to think about. I mean, it makes you wonder, was he given so much knowledge on the day that he was created that over time man has lost a lot of that knowledge? I don't know. Something to think about. Something to think about. Well, I'm just about out of time here and getting down to the last minute. So I just want to thank you for listening today. I'll be back again next Friday. I'm going to be out of town some more, but I will be back next Friday. So I'll be here next Friday at 11 o'clock with What's Happening Marion, and then 12 o'clock with the Exchange Club with Scott and Matt. And then I'll be back here at 1 o'clock with Study His Word. And next Friday is going to be a normal day. Scott will be in here at 8 o'clock in the morning, and possibly I will definitely have a guest on What's Happening Marion at 11 o'clock. He's going to share some upcoming things, events that are going on. I think you'll find him very interesting. He's connected with a local club. I think you'll find that very interesting. And then I'm working on a special guest at 1 o'clock. So hopefully we can get that all worked out for next Friday. Monday, of course, is our big day for the eclipse. And so I encourage you to be at Steak and Shake. If you have the chance, be at Steak and Shake at 1 o'clock from 1 to 5. We're going to be doing all those festivities, setting off balloons, putting money up in the air, viewing the eclipse. If we get enough sunlight, we'll get a chance to see it. So see you on Monday. Have a good weekend.
You're listening to The Talking Place from Charlie Evers.
You know, you could come in handy, too, with that electric.